welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks so much for downloading and listening. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on Twitter at NJ287, also on LinkedIn, where I post more content, the website, dsmsports.net, as always, and check out the podcast on your preferred podcast platform, and please check out Slyke, S-L-Y-K-E, www.slyke.co. Great episode for you guys today. Just so privileged to be able to talk to this guy. My guest on the podcast is Brian Fitzsimmons. He is Director of Licensing and Business Development for Barstool Sports. I am endlessly fascinated by Barstool Sports as a brand, as a company. I am a consumer of their content. They do just such a tremendous job of creating commerce that feels organic, feels like it makes sense. We're going to talk about how that comes together. They, of course, were originally founded as sort of a regional Boston-based sports group. Now they're just a sports powerhouse. The Turning Group was an early investor who kind of pioneered the sort of content to commerce, which Barstool has truly mastered, and just really, really interesting stuff. So listen up. Here is Brian Fitzsimmons, Director of Licensing Business Development for Barstool Sports. I am back with today's guest, and I'm so psyched to pick his brain. I've been an admirer of his work for years now, of the brand that he works for, just tremendous stuff coming ahead for you. My guest on the podcast today is Brian Fitzsimmons. He is Director of Licensing and Business Development for Barstool Sports. And welcome to the podcast today, Brian.
What's up, Neil? Thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited to be here.
Hell yeah. It's like to pick your brain. I think what you guys do, especially in the realm of licensing and biz dev, is so dang impressive. And you're really creating a paradigm that other brands can follow and just really cool stuff. So I'm psyched to pick your brain and learn all about it. But before we get into the meat of our discussion, Brian, tell us about you. Tell us about your career path, how you got in this role today, all your stops along the way, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do.
Sure. So yeah, I have a pretty interesting and non-traditional path to how I ended up to where I am now. When I went to college, I wanted to be a reporter. So when I got to college, I went to Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Connecticut. I declared my major early on as a freshman in media studies with a focus on journalism. And I had spent day and night my time in college figuring out how can I bolster my resume to the point where I can hit the ground running in my career as a reporter. So I took as many different classes as I could, did internships with the Connecticut Post newspaper, worked my way up to being the editor-in-chief of the school paper there. You know, I was all in on being a reporter. After I graduated college, I got a job for a wire service, PA Sports Ticker, which was a competitor of the Associated Press. I got a job as an NHL reporter for them. And then the company actually was bought out by Stats LLC. Wow. And the company was liquidated. So I actually lost my job 9 months into it. Oh, geez. Luckily, shortly thereafter, an opportunity presented itself at MSG. They were about to launch a 24/7 linear and digital network dedicated solely to high school sports called MSG Varsity. Okay. And they were looking for a managing editor. And I was fortunate enough to get that position where I spent 5 years. So for the first 6 years of my career, I was very much involved in content creation, on-air reporting, and then serving as a reporter for various sports. And then it was around that time where I started to feel a bit stagnant in where I was going, and I felt like I was ready for a new challenge. And I found that at a new job at AOL. Mm-hmm. I spent 3 years there in a role where I headed up their sports programming efforts. And at that time, I was introduced to more of the business development side and more of the product side of digital media. Mm-hmm. And that helped kind of cultivate my interest there, which is what I do at Barstool Sports now.
Very cool. I have to ask. We probably could have waited to get into in the second segment, but any really cool stories or athletes that you came across when you were at MSG Varsity? Like any like future stars that were at Connecticut high schools or whatnot during your time there?
Oh yeah, so many. I was fortunate enough, being based in northern New Jersey, that's such a hotbed for high school football and high school basketball, that I was around so many different, you know, now NFL stars and NBA stars. I would say the biggest one and my favorite was being around Karl-Anthony Towns. He's su such a great guy, amazing family, just a great person. I thoroughly enjoyed being with him. I actually got to we did a documentary on him at my time at MSG, and we actually went to his house, his parents' house, and did a screening with him. So I kind of got to know Carl a little bit, personally away from the court, and getting to know him was a lot of fun. And then aside from that, one of the things that was most exciting for me at my time at MSG was I wrote a book called Celtic Pride, and it was about the nationally ranked St. Patrick's High School basketball team. And the book was about Kyrie Irving and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist high school teams. So I got to know those guys as well, and kind of, spend every day with them almost for a whole year. That was an unbelievable experience. So yeah, to your point, being in that area yielded a lot of fun stories and some cool relationships. Those were easily my favorites.
That's so cool. And it's interesting to come up. Like I talked to a lot of people that started out in journalism on this podcast and over the years, and the high school beat to bigger beat to national beat is was kind of the old path of like how you make it in media. And so like they get that on level experience, and especially like going from PA Sports Ticker to MSG to like what almost probably felt like a little bit of a startup of like we are telling stories that really haven't been told in this way before. And it's got a cool way to sort of get your foot in the door and get your understanding of what really drives audience, I guess, and what the how you can get the most out of a given story. And you did through a book, through telling stories of guys who came on came became superstars. It's really cool.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I always say that MSG, those 5 years I spent there was so important to my learning path, because for the longest time throughout college, and then my first year out of college, my first job, I was just solely focused on editorial content. It's all I knew. And MSG really broadened my horizons, where I started to understand the ins and outs of multimedia. How does a production team operate? How does a production team treat highlight packages for a highlight show? How do they produce features? How do they put on a full broadcast of a certain game? Me being exposed to those things innately got me prepared for what I was going to eventually have to work hand in hand with at my job at AOL and now Barstool.
And I gotta imagine, I didn't expect this to go in this direction, but it's a perfect segue of thinking about when you're doing a feature story for MSG Varsity, when you're doing something like writing a book, like how to justify that this is something that's worth the resources. We're gonna get some sort of ROI, whatever that ROI means. Like what were kind of your early learnings on what went into producing content and kind of what justified, yes, it's a story worth working on. And I guess how did that story evolve? I think early on it's just like, oh yeah, you're covering a beat, therefore you got to do X, Y, and Z. Like this is just what we do. And then I think as we moved along and media became a little more or resource, I guess, cognizant and thinking about what the ROI was going to be of given stories and allocation of resources, how did you sort of start to think about like, okay, we have to really be thoughtful about the content we're going to produce and what kind of return we can get from it.
Well, yeah, that's such a great question, and I think it also highlights an interesting discussion around how content creators have had to completely change the way they think about why are they producing a certain type of content, and people have been forced to become more entrepreneurial and smarter from a business standpoint. Because when I was strictly a content creator, my throughout college and my first year of my career, and then in the beginning stages at MSG, my only lens was find a great story to be able to deliver to the users, right? This was at a time when Twitter was just starting to get ramped up. Like, content distribution and how social media plays a role in delivering people content, that wasn't a thing. And it goes to show, I guess, how old I am now, but being in college and graduating in 2008, the same year that Twitter came about, and the way that people started to see Facebook as a medium to deliver content to people, as for distribution, I never had to think about any of that. Now, if you're a content creator, it's all you think about. And not only that, to take it a step further, you have to think about, okay, is this story and content interesting? Is this going to play well on all different platforms? Right? So it's like people have had to become a lot more entrepreneurial. They've had to become a lot smarter from a business standpoint. On how content is delivered, and they've needed to figure out how to please a bunch of different audiences because every platform has a different type of audience. I
Yeah.
never had to deal with that in my early years of my career, and I just now that we're talking about this, what a it's so interesting how the landscape has changed so much, and it's forced people to think differently.
Yeah. I mean, I had a conversation not too long ago with a guy who works in the sports space named Dan Gatt, and he talked about how when social media came about, it had to shift their mindset on, okay, we're used to producing content for our team website, and people that come to the team website, that's a very select group of fans. It's very avid. They want the insight. They want the X and O's versus on social. You can reach this whole other casual fan, the content discovery, someone who didn't even know they wanted your content, but you are presenting to them. So it's a little bit of like understanding who your audience is, who your potential audience is, how you can grow that audience. And it's just a really interesting sort of mind shift as social came about, and it's opened this whole new door of opportunities.
Yeah, man, and to go take it a step further too, the amount of work that is asked of beat reporters these days compared to what was asked of them at, let's say, at the time when I was graduating college in 2008, 15 years ago, throughout a game right now, beat reporters have to be, constantly engaging with their audience on the social platforms, especially Twitter, because that's kind of now become like the popular second screen for when you're watching sports. You're also sc scrolling through the timeline to see, everyone's opinion of what's happening in front of your eyes. Beat reporters have to be on top of that and help create conversation. Back when I was first getting trained on how to be a reporter and how to find great angles as a sports reporter, I was able to have the mind space during the game to be thinking about those things. Whereas now, I think it's a lot more challenging that you have to be entertaining an audience. You're more or less hosting a party if you're a
Yeah.
beat reporter on your platforms, right? You have to be engaging with your audience at that time while watching the game, while also trying to conceptualize what is my column and feature story going to be? And then also, how am I going to deliver the game story in an entertaining way? There's so many different things that beat reporters now have to do that 15 years ago was something you couldn't even fathom.
Hell yeah. So I want to talk briefly just about like how your understanding of monetizing content has evolved. I mean, early on, of course, it was very much, someone comes to our newspaper or publication or online publication, they get served an ad. Maybe the internet kind of screwed up early on by making all content free and just ad supported, and they should have had subscriptions earlier. That's a whole other podcast that we won't go into today. But how has your understanding of the evolution of monetizing content evolved in your career, and take us right up until today, where I think Barstool Sports is maybe the best in the world at monetizing content?
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're very proud of the business model that we've built in terms of having a diverse revenue stack. But to answer your question, how is my understanding of how digital media companies make money and whatnot? It's funny. I had no concept of it, even throughout my days at MSG, and a lot of it was because our product at MSG under the Cablevision and Optimum umbrella, our only KPI was to lure people away from Verizon and get them to sign up with Optimum because MSG Varsity was an Optimum exclusive. So
Interesting.
we were a more or less a marketing machine for them. And from a product perspective, we were a perk of being someone who subscribed to Verizon and Optimum, or excuse me, subscribed to Optimum for their cable channels, right? So I never had to worry about top line revenue. I never had to worry about, ROI on paid spend or anything like that. We didn't have to worry about expanding into merch. We didn't have to worry about ticket sales for events. There's a million different ways a brand can make money in the digital space. I didn't have to think about any of it. So I was very green in how digital companies and media companies made money. I started to really learn that and gain a good education of that when I was at AOL. I had the fortunate opportunity of being surrounded by a lot of smart people there. And that really prepared me for my time here at Barcel, where, I've been here almost 6 years now, and I feel like I've gotten an unbelievable education here of how to properly run a good business, and on top of that, how to make winning bets that pay off from a revenue perspective, that other companies may not be doing. Right. So it's we've been able to capitalize on the things that a lot of media companies do, but we've kind of carved our own path in how we generate revenue. And me learning from a lot of the brilliant leaders here too has certainly opened my eyes to how digital media companies make money, but then also what are some of the deficiencies in the industry today too.
So let's talk about kind of getting to Barstool, getting to understand like how what was your understanding of the brand and the business like when you came in, and what was sort of the indoctrination, I don't use that as a pejorative, just like learning the brand, learning all the personalities, learning what all the revenue streams were there, what the vision was going to look like, what the brand was, who all the players were, and just it's such a massive, like I think a lot of massive scale now that probably even someone like myself who does consume Barstool sports content doesn't know the half of what I'm not consuming. It's so like, what was the process like of learning just all the ins and outs, and also kind of what the business model was and where they wanted to go?
Yeah, so I came to Barcelona at a really interesting time. I came in the middle of 2018. They had gotten their original investment from the Chernin Group in 2016. It's when they brought in Erica as their CEO, and they really started to figure out and lay out the roadmap from a perspective of Barstool Sports. For the longest time, had been a regional blog where the majority of its audience was nestled in the Northeast and specifically Boston. And how do we grow from being that to a national brand that everyone knows? That was the long game, and that was the vision at that time. Fast forward to when I got there, about a year and a half after Erica was brought on and the Chernin Group invested in the company. We were at a time when we started to create a little bit of a fire where people around the country started to understand Barstool Sports and what our value prop was and why we were different. What we needed to do was take the rabid fan base that we have and continue to give them more and continue to build around the personalities that we had that had become very popular. That this was a time when, pardon my take, was just about 1 year old. Foreplay was just about 1 year old. Spit and Chiclets was about a year and a half old when I got here. So we were at a time when we needed to start building around them and start thinking of them as their own individual companies. Think of Barstool Sports as their own IP house in a way. Yeah, I got to spend a lot of time learning and a lot of time executing on various strategic products that helped Barstool Sports scale from a content and social perspective, from a merch perspective, from a licensing perspective, and from a live events perspective, to the point where over time, our top of funnel had grown so vast that people started to get into the Barstool Sports ecosystem by a lot of different unrelated things. And in my mind, that's what makes Barstool today so interesting, is that you'll talk to one Barstool sports fan that says, "Oh, I got into Barstool because of Dave's pizza reviews." Then you'll hear someone else say, "Well, I got into it because part of my take." Or someone will say, "Well, I got into it because I'm a big golf fan and I love their golf merch." Some person might say, "Well, I got into it because Chicks in the Office. I love Rhea and Fran. I love the world of entertainment. and they talk about entertainment in a way that nobody else does. So it's we have so many unrelated things going on that we have a really easy time catching new fans because of how vast our offering is, not just from a content perspective, but from a product perspective as well.
Yeah, and that makes it, I'm sure, a lot of fun to be in your position where you have these opportunities and things that are thrown your way with that top funnel audience, with that diverse audience as well. So like when you think about, I mean, some of those revenue streams, some of those levers that are becoming a little more prevalent, say like, okay, I have a podcast, therefore now I'm gonna also drop some merch and make some money that way. And like some of those things are a little more, I guess, part of the standard formula now. But you guys have gone well beyond that to, you know, creating branded products and experiences and events that, you know, you leverage that IP. So when you think about like, okay, we can launch a merch line and then we can expand it to, we can launch a merch line for this creator and their audience, this creator and their audience, this podcast, that show, that video cast, or we can also explore new products as well. Like when you're thinking about like, is it about, hey, let's milk everything we can out of this particular type of revenue stream, or let's explore new products? I mean, I'm sure it's a little bit of both, but how do you kind of allocate your own headspace and your own opportunities and mind?
That's a really good question. I would say that one of the great things that Dave has always preached to us is use common sense. And I think that when we're looking to see where there's opportunity, we simply use our common sense. And what you know, for instance, one of my favorite partnerships that we currently have is with our Barstool bar. So we have bars in Scottsdale, Chicago, Philadelphia, and Nashville. And when you think about it, you know, Barstool Sports, you know, our DNA is how we relate to people that, you know, love watching sports, and we talk about sports in a way that you would with your friend at a bar, right? And you know, us being able to have a physical presence that reflects our brand, it just makes so much sense, you know. In my mind, and it doesn't even have to be sports, you know, from a sports perspective, I think any licensing deal where the end user sees it and says, man, that makes so much sense, and that is so brilliant, that's how you know you have the home run, right? And I think that from that one example of our bars, I think we really checked that box where it's just like Barstool Sports should have physical bars. It's so perfect, you know. So I would say that that's kind of the lens that we look at, is like, does this make sense? Do we think that it will be successful? And does it properly layer onto the successful things that we have done? And I would say a fourth pillar is, does it perfectly complement the brand that we're trying to build on as well?
No, I think that's really well put and really astute to really consider like that sort of doesn't make sense lens is really natural and it should be obvious and it should be obvious and it should be value add as well, where it's not just whatever, a money grab. It's something to enhance the experience, enhance the brand, and do something that fans appreciate as well. Like they see that as like, hell yeah, I want to go to a Barstool bar and meet people that are also, you know, fans of this irreverent and fun way of looking at sports. So I love that lens to it. I just let's take it back for a moment, Brian, as well, just for the noobs and maybe for myself as well, what your remit is, or what it means to do licensing, and kind of what your various levers are that are at your disposal.
So I have a very interesting job, but for my job, my role has changed a lot over the years too. So when I first got to Barstool Sports in 2018, I was brought on to help manage a subscription product. When I had gotten to Barstool, the subscription was something that the Chernin Group had wanted to try out at the company. It was a hot issue around the industry. It was around the time of the rise of The Athletic, so on and so forth. So I managed that little sector of our business. About 6 months after that, we got that off the ground. It was successful at the time, and that was at a time when we had never really had a dedicated role and a dedicated person to look after all the content that we have going on, and kind of being like an air traffic controller to ensure that we are distributing the content in a smart manner. and
Okay.
ensuring that we're shining a light on all the places that we should and want to shine a light. I did that for about a year, and then I was transitioned more so into the partnerships and business development and licensing world, which is where I live now, and cut my teeth in that role for a number of years. And that was really the role where I learned how to properly run good sectors of our business. And that's kind of helped propel me to where I am now, where I help our commerce team identify new opportunities in the licensing and business development realms, and try to figure out how can we build and layer onto the great things that we have started here. Like, what is the thing that we can tack onto and scale for, pardon my take. For that, we created the Pardon My Cheesesteak virtual dining brand. We created the Stella Blue coffee D2C coffee brand under Big Cat. We created the bars for Foreplay. What is the thing that would speak to the Foreplay golf audience, and it would be genuine to the talent involved, and it would make sense for everyone? We forged a partnership with Supreme Golf and created a tee time booking app called the Barstool Golf Time app. So it's things like that that I look after to try to figure out how can we grow our business, how can we keep our commerce business healthy, and how can we help the big brands that help steer the ship for us, how can we help them continue to grow?
I'm grinning so wildly now that the listeners can't see this because this is exactly the conversation I wanted to be having with you on the podcast today, Brian. And like, there's not, I kind of want to go a little bit of inside baseball of how these things come together because, like, I mean, there's Big Cat, Dan Katz with the coffee memes every morning on his Twitter, and now and then there's a coffee brand. There is Ryan Whitney talking about his pink lemonade vodka mix that he likes, and now there's Pink Whitney. So like, is it and there's a little bit of, I'm sure, audience analysis, understanding what your audience is into, what brands they're into, what their propensities are, and you could go find a sponsor to fill that category. You could build something that is truly co-branded because it aligns so closely with organic things that your talent's already doing. So like, is there a little bit of like, what's the sort of chicken and egg I analysis there? How do you identify that this is an opportunity for us? This is where we can really create something that's truly co-branded because it aligns so perfectly. And are you looking for those opportunities? Like, oh, you know what? Like, I do notice Big Cat doing a coffee meme every morning. Maybe there's something there that we can do with that. That's like, how does that stuff come together? Because it's so freaking cool.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I wish I had a better answer for you. But the true, honest answer is that there's no template to it. There's no formula to it. And I think that's it's very very true to Barstool's DNA too. Is that there's always a catalyst, and we are incredibly reactionary. I would like to think that our licensing business was more strategic and less opportunistic, but it's just the way that we operate, and the brilliance of this company is how we react. And to your point, a lot of it comes from very organic sparks. Like you mentioned, Big Cat posting these coffee memes just because he thinks they're fun. It's funny to make fun of, like, old people that just put like coffee memes on their Facebook every morning. Like, it transpired from there. You hit the nail on the head. And like, same thing with Ryan Whitney, discussing how he the pink lemonade and all that. It was like the light bulb went off, and it was like, man, we have something here, right? Then there are, yes, there on the other side of the coin, there are times where we come up with the idea and strategically think about how this would fit into our ecosystem. We're a maniacal about looking at data. So yes, there are times where we are strategic and go chase an opportunity to see if there's anything there. But yeah, to your point, there are times where we are more reactionary, and it is not strategic, and it's more like it kind of just happens to us, and we're just able to wrap our arms around those things when they come our way, and it's allowed our batting average to become much higher to identify when those things happen because we've gone through it so many times.
Was there sort of like an early, I guess, light bulb or case study moment where you're like, "Hey, this is what Barstool is going to be. Like, this is how we're going to be different from any other media companies that are struggling to get by through, your classic ads." And you guys still do direct response sponsorships and all that as well. But like, was there that, "Hey, like, this is how we're going to change the paradigm of how digital media companies make money?" Like, or like, were there sort of a template, not a template necessarily, but one of those early successes that were like, "This is a template that we can use so that we can go to New Amsterdam Baca and say, we've done this before. Look at this. This we're going to do this again."
Yes, I would say that when we have successful partnerships in the licensing arena, it certainly makes it easier for us to identify the things that went really well, the things that went not so well. What are the things that we would do different, right? It's just like anything. The more times you go through it, the more you learn, the better you get at it. So yes, I would say that going from partnership to partnership and new product to new product, you learn a lot. But I think what's most interesting about your question is this goes far beyond licensing. The template of we're going to change the game around how media companies can make money. Dave had what was so brilliant so many years ago to be able to pair merch with content in a way that has never been done before. And when you think back to the times of like the early Brady Belichick years, and when Barstool was like just getting its website up and running, and the way that they presented merch, and like when you take a look at the Deflategate, for instance, I think that's like the best case study of how a media company at that time, if you can call it a company, tackled content with a certain point of view and was able to layer on merch that would kind of serve as a rallying cry to people. That pairing was such a spark, and it kicked off a standard operating procedure for Barstool of how content and merch go hand in hand. And we still carry that formula with us today. It's like when a big moment breaks out, Barstool is going to end up having, a shirt that goes along with it. And whenever you go into read someone's blog, the you're going to have a link to a merch product that correlates with that person's point of view, right? There's something special about the marriage between content and merch that Barstool has had for the longest time. And we've been able to, obviously keep up with that. But think about how many media companies have struggled to find that correlation or be able to execute upon it, right? The fact that we've been able to continue to do it for so long, I think is a testament to how brilliant Dave's vision was so long ago in terms of how a media company can make money outside of just content.
I love it so much. And it enhances authenticity. It enhances the community of fans as well. I mean, you think back like when you and I were coming up and thinking about a career in media, it was like it was almost an anathema to like to show your POV, to show who you were a fan of. And then maybe Bill Simmons is one of the early ones who was like writing from a fan's perspective. And now all of a sudden that like it's part of the business is to have a perspective and you create that community. And now you walk around and yeah, people aren't wearing New York Times based branded t-shirts, but they are wearing Barstool branded t-shirts. And you meet someone else that has that same t-shirt, that you have that community as well. And so it just makes the Barstool brand even stronger when those things are out there. And it's a cool part of that flywheel, I guess, as well.
You're so right. Yep.
I want to also talk about like, do you look at certain categories that are in your guys' wheelhouse? Like, hey, like we know that our fans drink alcohol, drink coffee, like to get food while they're watching a game. Like, are there areas where you're like, okay, this is an area that we can focus on as we continue to grow our business that we're gonna be able to really nail it if we do this kind of product or service versus this is something that we should, maybe just use our eyeballs and work with a sponsor instead to fill that. Do you have in your head like this is what the Barstool ecosystem of products and services are going to look like in the future?
Yes and no. I think that I don't want to give too much away, but
Oh,
I would
yeah.
say that yeah, there
Generalities.
are rough ideas of places that we would like to move next. But then I'd be lying if I said that we had that perfectly planned out, kind of like what you were alluding to. I think being able to embrace the mixture of being opportunistic and strategic is something that we need to hold core. I think that if we were to solidify a product roadmap that was maybe, too cemented in, it's almost like, well, then you rob yourself of capitalizing on the magic of the catalyst that happens here and being, reactionary and opportunistic. I think we've done a very good job as a team keeping that core and being able to straddle the line of, being able to be reactionary, but then also being strategic and forward thinking.
Yeah, and that's kind of maybe where the chicken and egg comes in to some degree as well. Like you look at because brands and celebrities using their NIL isn't using their IP NIL to use like the buzz term, I guess. You look at like Rihanna and Fenty Beauty. Like it was obvious she was gonna do a beauty brand or someone else like Jessica Alba with. I mean, obviously she just got out of the Honest Group, or I think it was called. But like that was kind of very it seemed organic and authentic, which a lot of the Barstool ones do as well. So when you guys are thinking about where content comes into play when you're creating a new content franchise, when you're scouting or bringing in a new creator, is it like, hey, this creator is doing something that is reaching a different audience that we haven't reached before, or they're have a different POV, or they're in a sport that we haven't really covered as well, or this is going to lead to this opportunity that they are in? Like, how do you think about the way that content connects to commerce, and or is it kind of vice versa? Like, we know we're going to go in this direction, we want to go in this direction, we think there's a lot of opportunity here, so let's find the content franchise or content creator that will make that authentic connection to that area.
Well, I don't want to speak too deeply about the content onboarding process because I'm not very very involved in that. But what I do know is that Dave has a very good eye for talent that will elicit a reaction, has a strong POV, and will be able to cultivate a fan base. He's very good at having an eye for that. And I think what happens is when that new content creator comes into the ecosystem, one of the great things about Barstool is we give full creative freedom. They're given a laptop, they have their phone, and that we just say, go. Great. It's so different than when you look at traditional media, like a network. Talent is asked to, they have a call time, they have a producer. That person has a boss. That person has a boss. That person has a boss. They are told to dress a certain way. They are told to have certain talking points of when they have their hit on TV, right? We are the complete opposite, where people have the creative freedom to do what they want, present themselves how they want, because they know that their point of view best, right? And usually that will create a spark in a certain area. And from there, we start to see audience ballooning from a new content creator. We start leaning into that and figuring out, is there something here from a licensing perspective? Is there something here from a merch perspective? I think a great example is Frank the Tank. So Frank the Tank is someone that I it is so brilliant, because when you take a look at his social media presence, 99.9% of people know Frank as the guy who goes on these epic rants and freaks out whenever the Mets lose, right? He's kind of created a rabid fan base around just because they want to see how he's going to react to something in the sports world, right? But what he's done is he's been able to drill down and really expand out of how people are seeing him. He started this new series called Frank Walks, and it's all centered around how He has one-on-one interviews with someone interesting in the sports world. He just released an episode with Doc Gooden, and it also was created because he's going through a health journey. He wants to lose a lot of weight and get healthy. And through one of the great things about this, Neil, is when you watch these episodes, you see a whole new side of Frank. He's curious, he's deep, he's thoughtful, he's very smart. And I think that that's a great example of how a content creator started producing content, the audience grew, found that he had something, and it started to layer on different ways of showing who he or she is. Now that you have Frank's, crazy social media videos, you have the Frank Walks interviews. We started creating merch around that. I think Frank right now is going about it in a great way of thinking himself as his own IP. And how do you properly layer around the fire that you've started?
And you get these really strong parasocial relationships as well, where now, like, if I am also someone who is struggling with weight and wants to lose weight, like maybe there's like a whatever, a nutrition thing that's at play there, or an exercise thing at play there, that I can go through this journey with Frank. And I'm sure that's like music to your ears of like a licensing opportunity that is sitting right there. And I think of all these things as well. Like I know you guys went very viral not too long ago with Jersey Jerry and his long sessions of going for holes in one or whatever it might be. So when something like that happens, are you like, holy shit, like we have a new template to work with? Or like what's your reaction from a licensing and biz dev perspective when something sort of serendipitous just becomes bigger than anyone could have even imagined?
Yeah, I mean, I do think though, like from a licensing perspective, it's not every single thing warrants
Or
a
biz dev, I guess.
discussion around a new product. I would say that we because we've had a lot of success in this arena, we've been able to become very discerning around what opportunities we want to chase. For the Jersey Jerry hole-in-one challenge is a great example by you of a Barstool moment, right? That became such a massive thing for us on social. Him trending on Twitter for 2 days straight. You got Tom Brady tweeting words of encouragement at him. You got every celebrity under the sun is saying how like I can't keep my eyes off of this. We did a nice job of creating t-shirts around that. In my mind, I thought the way that was executed was perfect. We let the moment be its moment. I think that if I were to, try to figure out, how can we build a certain product around this, or like what can we do to further this? I don't know if there was really anything there. I think that was a good example of, let's let the moment be the moment and let's capitalize on that moment in the ways that we know will succeed in this immediate future, and then just go from there.
And there have been other sort of like marathon session events or whatever you want to call it, whether it's the free throw shooting that Big Cat and the team did, and these other sort of long sessions where maybe it goes on something in your head of like, okay, we're gonna have these 8, 12, 24, 48-hour live sessions. Like, what are all the ways that we can add value to it for fans and also monetize it in a way as well? So it's almost like these platforms that kind of get created authentically and then become something that you guys can turn into something of an asset to use, something of an overgeneralization, I guess, or oversimplification of it.
Yeah, the free throw contest was another good example of us creating a moment. So we kicked off our partnership with DraftKings, where the guys had to hit 41 straight free throws, and it went on for I think it was like 17 hours or something. It was wildly entertaining to watch. I mean, they were down bad for a while. There was a time when they got Patrick Beverley on the horn and begged him to come drive to the office to help bail them out, because Patrick Beverley has a podcast with us, the Pat Bev Show. And he's been awesome to work with. So he came down and took a couple shots to help out. Mark Titus is one of our one of our podcast hosts and content creators. You know, he was a big contributor to it. But yeah, the whole phenomenon of getting a group of guys together to try and hit 41 straight free throws, again, it created a social moment. But to your point, what it really did was it ignited a fire for our community and got them excited about our new partnership with DraftKings. And for us, that's the type of value that we want to always deliver for our clients.
Yeah, and I think about a couple of minutes left here with Brian Fitzsimmons, Director of Licensing and Business Development for Barstool Sports. Brian, I could keep you all day. I won't keep you too much longer, I promise. Just the idea of this parasocial relationship with the creators. I mean, I think of myself and just that Barstool is still, you know, it's relatively young compared to like your gray old lady, you know, media companies. And so there are people that have been, you know, that graduated college when Barstool was first getting big and are now whatever. Having kids, maybe get ready for college, maybe not quite that long, but are it's something to that realm. And I think about like I'm a diehard Pardon My Take listener, and to hear kind of Big Cat's evolution of like becoming a first-time father and then growing his boat and growing his kids and having the problems of a father that would come along, and like his audience, myself included, is sort of experiencing this life journey with him. It's like, does that opportunity open up like, okay, in the future, maybe we have like something that's for fathers and sons that's you know, that's whether it's with a sponsor or with a product. Like, are you thinking about sort of that lifespan and not taking advantage of, but leveraging these parasocial relationships that your fans, your listeners are kind of experiencing life along with these creators?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I think one of my favorite things about what we see with our audience and their connection with the content creators here is, you know, in a way, it feels like you know the guys and like they're your friends, right? And so in a way, to your point, it's almost like you're growing up with them, right? And you know, to your point, Big Cat, you know, is always being very open about, you know, the trials and tribulations and the joys of being a dad. And you know, to think how many millions of Pardon My Take listeners are now also becoming dads, that you know, it's just another avenue for them to connect with the personalities here. And I love that. So yeah, will that open up new opportunities? You know, from like a revenue generating perspective, I don't know. I never want to say never, but
Totally.
I do think it's something special when you know you have an audience that connects with the content creators and the personalities and the way that ours do. You know, I think that it's a testament to how Barstool over the years has done a great job of keeping the user first, keeping the audience first. And I think that's why you see people, you know, over the years continue to stick with us and continue to grow with us.
Yeah, and it's kind of just like a full circle to what we've been talking about here throughout of just the authenticity of it, of having that unique POV that they're not just coming to hear a recap of the game. They're coming to hear a recap of the game from this personality, from this creator. And therefore, that's where the opportunities come up so that when Frank Tang is walking to get healthier or when Big Cat is talking about his having kids and all that, it's where that relationship comes into play that it transcends the just the sports kind. It transcends, you know, the byline in the old school newspaper, and it's that relationship that is what makes Barstool so powerful and so important to its fans, and it's cool to hear that come full circle. Well, Brian, I
Yep,
have
absolutely.
a billion more questions I was planning to ask you, but we will have some fun in our quick pitches segment. First episode of Shareable Stat coming up right now. Man, that was just so good being able to learn from Brian Fitzsimmons of Barstool. Just tremendous insight, information. I was taking mental notes. Hope you were taking manual notes. I took some notes when I was editing the podcast. So much interesting information, so much good insight into how they do what they do, truly developing IP, monetizing in a way that feels really authentic to fans, and is continuing to do a great job of creating opportunities for organic monetization and creating content that continues to convert. But we're having some more fun with Brian coming up in our quick pitches segment. But first, this episode's Shareable Stat. This episode's Shareable Stat is about Facebook. You know, I think Facebook is almost so overrated as to be underrated now. You know, it has its reputation as a place for only old people. And yes, it does skew older compared to, say, Instagram and TikTok and even YouTube. But Facebook continues to go pretty strong. It still has puts up big numbers. It still creates viral posts, believe it or not, in the sports space and beyond. And today's shareable stat is about the recommendations that are increasing in the feed. Just like Instagram is increasing their algorithmic recommendations, the amount in the feed, TikTok, of course, is built off of that. They kind of popularized that. And the shareable stat is that today, 30% of feed posts that you see when you're browsing the Facebook feed, when users browse it, 30% are recommendations, are suggestions from outside of the user's network. And that has more than doubled in the last 2 years. So it's not just even the rise of TikTok in the pandemic. It's since 2022 to now in 2024, it has gone from 15% to 30% of posts that people see in their Facebook feed are suggestions from outside the network. So what does that mean for you? If you are running a page, if you are running a couple of pages, it's that you can think of more of it a little bit more like TikTok or Instagram, where you can create some posts that are sort of outside your core, try to appeal to other interests because it may be reaching fans or friends of fans or others who are just have not touched your page before, or at least are not following or subscribed to your page and its updates. So that's one thing to think about, is potentially change up the type of content you're putting up there. Think about more niche interests and not just the straight up traditional X's and O's, but also you may even think about creating verticalized pages or different pages for Facebook. That's become something that some organizations are doing on TikTok, where they're creating lots of different accounts to appeal to different content types so they can really niche down. But that's what Facebook is doing. Just like TikTok, they want to take your content and find at least a 30% number. Find a group of users for whom this content is going to appeal, what they're going to engage with or share with or comment. So that's an opportunity too to create different types of content senders. Maybe you have a Facebook page for lifestyle, for food, for around the venue, for moms or dads or families, people with kids or who knows, or maybe more X and O's focused one. It's an opportunity to really think outside your typical network. And especially, you know, Facebook's around for so long. I mean, I've liked pages probably that I liked 15 years ago when Facebook was still just kind of getting started, getting big, or even more than 15 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago, kind of dating myself here. But I was around among that first generation of users that that joined Facebook back in the day. So a really interesting insight to think about as Facebook's feed becomes more algorithmic recommendations, how does it affect your ability to reach new fans and reach them with content that they maybe previously didn't want or didn't know they wanted, and certainly packaging as well. So that's a short shareable stat, but more importantly, stick around because lots more insights and stories from Bryphon Simmons of Barstool Sports. Back in this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Brian Fitzsimmons. He is Director of Licensing and Business Development for Barstool Sports. Brian, just had a tremendous interview with you. Are you now ready for some quick pitches?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, number one, I want to know, give us the scouting report for Brian Fitzsimmons, the pitcher.
You did some good research there. Yeah, I played baseball my whole life. Pitched throughout high school and college. Played 2 years at Sacred Heart University. Yeah, so yeah, pitching is near and dear to my heart. It's it was my first love, no doubt. Scouting report on pitching. I had a very good changeup. I'll toot my own horn there. But yeah, I would say fastball, very average. I think I was able to change speeds very well. That's why I was effective back in the glory days. Threw strikes, always tried to be a good teammate, you know. So yeah, I think if you're looking for an overall scouting report, I got the most out of my arm that I could. I'm proud of the changeup that I threw for so many years. I just wish I had a couple more miles per hour in there, but you know, what are you going to do?
as a lifelong Padres fan, I'm just picturing like a Trevor Hoffman kind of, where you don't have to go too fast. You can change speeds and that devastating changeup. So we'll give you that.
Oh yeah. I love Trevor Hoffman back in the day. Yeah. And being a diehard Yankee fan, watching us beat him in 98 made it even sweeter.
Oh, this podcast is over. Oh, geez. number two, for you, Brian, tell me the most memorable story you wrote or had a heavy hand in producing, just a story from your back in the times when you were creating content, a story that really sticks out to you.
Oh man, so many. Oh,
And we know you wrote a book, but I'm not gonna let you choose that one.
Yeah, I mean the book is special to me, no doubt, because for the longest time, my biggest goal in life was to write a book. Yeah, that was a special one, no doubt. But I think in terms of individual stories, ones that really stand out for me. I mean, it was a cool opportunity that I got to cover the Devils game when Marty Brodeur broke Patrick Waugh's all-time win record. That was special, especially as a Devils fan. I couldn't say that in the press box at the time, but I had to stay professional. But inside, I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. This is so cool." That was special. I would say too, in college, one that is really special to me is Sacred Heart had a basketball coach who had been there for like 30 plus years. He was the second longest tenured Division I coach in the country.
Wow.
And I had written a piece in the school paper about how it was almost, looking back, it was pretty ballsy, actually. I challenged the administration to, when he retired, to name our basketball court Coach Bike Court.
Wow.
And I articulated why. It was more or less a column that was celebrating his legacy, and I was more or less petitioning that, like, this university needs to do this. And it ended up happening shortly thereafter. And in a way, it was kind of gratifying to be like, this guy got the love and respect that he deserved. And even if I played like a small part in that, I don't know, that's pretty cool to me. My alma mater means a lot to me. So, yeah, I always look back on that story as being pretty special.
I love it. That's an awesome one. To look back on that court every day now, and just to know that there was a part of you that had a role in that. That's really freaking cool, man. All right, number three. Barstool puts on a lot of events, a lot of live events. So tell me your favorite event that Barstool's put on so far during your tenure there.
That's a great question. Favorite one. I would, oh man, there's a lot. You're asking tough ones. I would probably have to say the Arizona Bowl, the first year we did it last year. That one meant a lot because, not just because like the end product was awesome, like the broadcast was great. It was a great game to watch. Everything went well. I think it was more, I felt such an immense amount of pride from that because I remember the days when I first started at Barstool and the goals that we talked about. Those were what we just pulled off was one of those things that would fall in the bucket of like, oh, we'll never be able to do that, or like, we could never pull that off. Like, let's be serious now. And we did it, right? And it's like, we pulled off broadcasting a Division I bowl game 6 years prior to that. The company owned like five handheld cameras. And it's like, when you take a look at everything this company has been through as a group, that makes it very special. And I also loved how it was one of the few and far in between events where every single department was all in on it. Like, it was a full collaborative effort from like our live events team to our commerce team to our sales team to the content team to the social team to the executive team. Everyone was all in on it. And it was just such a cool, proud moment where, like, after the game, I remember that night, I was just like sitting and I was like, man, I am so freaking proud to work here.
Hell yeah.
And I feel like those types of moments come from things that will stick with you for the rest of your career and you'll never forget. And I'd have to say that one.
That's tremendous. It's so busy, and you work so many hours, and you're grinding. And I always tell people, you gotta stop and smell the roses, and to be able to step back and be like, look at what we are doing. It's a freaking Division One college football bowl game, and it's all us. That's gotta be so cool.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, we don't do that well. We don't We don't stop and look around and take stock in how far we've come. We're so bad at that. It's always just like, what's next? What's next? How can we get better? And yeah, to your point, it's important to stop and do that. I think we
Absolutely.
got to get a little better at that.
Number four for you, I'm going to a non-Barstool sports event. Tell me the best sports event you've been at in person and the sports event that on your bucket list that you most want to attend in the future.
Let's see here. My favorite sporting event that I've ever been
And the
to.
Marty Berger or Rick Rick game, that's a pretty cool one to be at, but I don't know if there's another one that tops that.
Yeah, that was a good one. I would probably have to say I'm a huge Yankees fan. I was fortunate enough to go to Derek Jeter's last game at the stadium where he had the walk-off hit. That
Yeah.
was incredible. That was actually a great week for me. I'll never forget it because that game was on a Thursday night, and I remember 2 days later on that Saturday I proposed to my wife. So
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
when you take a look at how emotional that and how spectacular that week was, yeah, I'll never forget that.
Really?
And then for bucket list, oh man, I would probably have to say a Jets Super Bowl. But it's funny if the Jets ever made it to the game, I don't know if I could even watch it with people. I'd be such a nervous wreck that I feel like I'd just have to like watch it just alone in peace and quiet. But yeah, I guess bucket list, I'd probably have to say either a Jets Super Bowl or a Devil's Stanley Cup game.
Okay.
That would be pretty cool.
Well, hey, you can buy the hype and Aaron Rodgers and believe that in 2025 the Super Bowl that maybe you'll be there.
Yeah, you got to keep the faith, right? It's all you can do.
I never thought this finishing one for you, Brian. Tell me the social media platform that you'd buy stock in to hold for the next 10 years. Which is a platform that you think is going to be on is still doing well, still thriving, and or on the way up if we're talking 10 years from now.
It's a great question. It's funny. I'm leaning towards saying Instagram, but you can't, there's no, from a sports perspective, we're talking, right? There's no substitute for conversation. Like X and Twitter, I think will forever be a massive part of how people consume sports.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think if you're asking just from a sports perspective, there's no substitute for conversation and being able to have people spit out their thoughts and opinions and commentary on a moment to moment basis. Yeah, I would probably say that one.
It's a good call. I mean, as much as Elon has tried to destroy that platform, which is me talking, every time a big game comes back on and we're all still there. We're all there talking.
Yeah, and you know what, like with how sports fans live on that platform, who knows what the future holds in terms of like what live sports and distribution looks like there. But yeah, I think if you had to ask me, pick one to invest in just from a sports perspective, I'd go that one. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good one for sure. Number six. This could be a fun one. If you can answer it, your dream brand collaboration or activation for Barstool. I want you to speak into existence. What's a dream one? Maybe there's Barstool brand of Lamborghinis, or I don't know, just something wild. Your dream collab.
I can't give that away. I know the answer. I'm not telling you.
There is an answer. You don't have to say it, but there's something a couple in your head that you'd be thinking about.
Yeah, the white whale. Yep.
All right, we'll have to wait until it becomes reality. I want you to make sure to ping me or text me on the side when it becomes reality, so I know. But hey,
I will.
that's
I
great.
will.
This is the time for our food question, Brian. We always ask a food question. You are up there in the Northeast, New York, New Jersey area. Tell me if I go out there and we hang out, what's the best meal to get? Where are you taking me? What are we getting?
Oh man, well, so I work at Barstool. I feel obligated to give you a pizza related
There we
answer.
go.
So I will say that when you come to the East Coast and we hang out, let's go out to dinner at Patsy's in Paterson, New Jersey. It is the best pizza you will ever have, hands down, guaranteed. End of debate.
That is really high level review there. That's I now you sold me. I have to go out there. I'm gonna be in Paterson, New Jersey one of these days.
And listen, if you don't trust my palate, Dave has supported it. He did a review. You got to go on YouTube and watch it. Patsy's in Paterson, New Jersey. He gave them like a 9, so it hit the mark.
Wow.
So I'm not crazy here. Dave will verify.
There we go. There's gonna be lines way out the door at Patsy's in New Jersey in the next couple of days after people
Yeah.
hear
Oh
this.
no, it's every day. They're used to it.
Oh, that's awesome. Number 8 for Brian coming down the wire here with Brian Fitzsimmons of Barstool Sports. Tell me the less somewhat lesser known Barstool show or creator or talent whose name is gonna grow the most in the next year or two and why. Like, who's kind of on the index of, from today to next year is just gonna blow up.
There's a couple. I think there's a lot to be excited about with our future. I mean, obviously you have our top tier brands like, Part of My Take and Foreplay and Spit and Chiclets, that Plan B, Chicks in the Office. But there are brands that are ripe for explosion. I think Bustin' with the Boys with
Yes.
Will Compton and Taylor Lewan, they are right there of exploding into a mega brand. They have become very smart about how they approach their content and how they distribute it. From a merch perspective, they've gotten into the live events. They have been very calculated and very smart about how they've gone about attacking their growth plan. And they've nailed it. And they're going to be a mega brand within a very short order. I think that, there are a number of comedians here that I think are very brilliant. If you watch The Yak, if you listen to Son of a Boy Dad podcast, Little Sass is hilarious. I think the Pat Bev pod is something that's also going to explode. So Patrick Beverly has a podcast with one of our biggest content creators, Roan. They've put together a podcast that is so interesting because the way that Pat Bev sees the world and the way that Roan sees the world is so different, and it's such a refreshing point of view. And I think it's pretty cool that you get to get kind of behind the velvet rope and access to an NBA player's thoughts about what's going on in the league today. He's also, wildly entertaining. So there's something there with how that brand continues to grow. It's become very big, but in my mind, I think there's a lot to layer on top of that too. So and we've started to see it with how the Pat Bev Pod's merch, really moves. So I think that they're really onto something and they should stick to it.
Very nice. Couple of really good ones there. And yeah, the active athlete pipeline, I mean, just the green field there is just amazing. Like you think about college athletes and NIL and every single sport to have an active athlete with a pod with a unique POV, just so much opportunity there. And Pat Bev is really setting a good stage as has Will Compton and Taylor Lewan on the football side. Good
Yep.
stuff. Next before you, Brian, come down here. Tell me a little about what the marketing machine looks like for Barstool. You guys have so many levers to pull, so many touch points with fans, so many different messages to get out there. Like, I guess in brief, what is give us a little inside picture of what that all looks like.
That's a great question. And I think it's actually one of my favorite parts about working here is no matter how long you've been here, or how much of an expert you feel that you are in terms of marketing or distribution, you'll never have it all figured out because our ecosystem is so complex with so many different piping that trying to figure that all out, it's pretty daunting. But luckily for myself and everyone that I work with, we've become very smart about how we go about marketing our new content types, our new merch products, our new licensing products. I'll give you an example. So we talked earlier about how we always are trying to figure out new opportunities to layer on top of the things that are working. I've also mentioned how we are maniacal about looking at data. Something that we just launched was with a company called Skillz. They're a very well-known sports equipment company, and we did co-branded golf training aids with the Foreplay guys. that are now being sold at Golf Galaxies and Dick's Sporting Goods House of Sport locations around the country. And we launched that 2 weeks ago. It's been a huge success so far. We marketed that, obviously through the Foreplay guys, but we were also able to lean upon other talent members that are just organically fans of golf and want to get better at golf. So that those products are made specifically for people like them. So it was easy for the talent to really get behind that and push that on their own. But yeah, from a marketing perspective, and using our muscles to the best of our ability and how complex our ecosystem is, we took full advantage of, blanketing skills in Barstool Golf co-branded training aids on our homepage of our O&O website, throughout our various social channels and different platforms. I mentioned through our talent, but then we've gotten really smart about how we speak to our audience members through SMS and through email marketing, and how we integrate promotions throughout all of our various shows. There's so many different ways to pull different levers that being able to execute upon a big marketing campaign for a launch, there is so much that goes into it, and the checklist is so long that it makes for a very powerful push. And because of that, obviously, with all the different things that we promote and businesses that we're trying to nurture and grow, we've taken full advantage and have figured out how to take full advantage of this powerful marketing machine that is Barstool Sports.
I mean, honestly, it's equal parts intimidating and exciting to hear about. Like, I'm like just hearing it all of like, there's so many things you can do. There's organic activation. There's paid activation. There's so many channels to hit up. Just, I my hat's off to you for help being part of it all, man, and helping to manage it all along the way, because it's exciting, like I said, but also intimidating to hear about. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. At Barstool, we certainly work hard, but we have fun doing it.
Hell yeah. All right, last one for you, Brian. This might be the hardest question of the entire podcast. So be ready. You said you are a Yankees fan. As much as this pains me to ask, as a Padres fan, tell me your prediction for Juan Soto's next contract and which team will he be signing that with?
Oh man. I do think the Yankees will re-sign him. I do. I think seeing what he's done on the field, how he's changed the culture about how other players are approaching their at bats, like you, the amount of patience that's been injected in all the players, it's palpable. So you see a star of that caliber, his ability to lead by example within the game. Obviously, he's a generational talent. That's enough to want to re-sign him, but obviously, the Steinbrenner family, the Yankee brass is very calculated. I'm sure they're looking at, how his merch moves. Is there ways to, kind of similar what we were talking about with building around, Barstool personalities or Barstool brands? They're probably thinking around what are the business opportunities that lie with Juan Soto's IP, right? And, in my mind, because of who he is, those possibilities are endless. You see his merch moving. You see that he's the type of caliber player that's gonna hopefully deliver the team a championship in the future. I don't see why the Yankees aren't able to offer him a massively lucrative contract, more so than any other team will offer. I'm a little concerned about Uncle Stevie and the boys in Queens. That guy's checkbook and budget may be a little more than the Yankees, but yeah, I think he'll go back to the Yanks. If you want a number figure, though, it's very interesting from a baseball fan's perspective of looking at what's going to happen in the future because of how Ohtani
Yeah, with all the
totally reset the market. Like, if you're Soto, do you ask with a straight face for 600?
right.
I don't know. I have no idea, but I'm morbidly curious to see what happens with this next deal. But if you want prediction, I do think it'll be with the Yankees.
Okay. And totally. And like the Ohtani deal just trained fans to like ask these questions now. When Jeff Passan and whoever announces the new deals out there, it's like, how much is a deferral? Like, how much is today money? Like, we just, after the
Yeah,
Ohtani,
it's true.
like, it's just crazy now the way you can kind of not beat the system, but sort of game the system a little bit in that sense. Just really interesting stuff. All
Yeah,
right, bro.
very much so. It's also like if you really look under the hood, it's could be a dangerous trend too. You
Oh
know,
my
like
God.
what is the Dodgers payroll going to look like, 15 years from now? Because they're still on the hook for that. And it hits them like a ton of bricks. Like you don't know if the cap will go up every year. You don't know if an owner is going to be able to take all that on. And it's like they're on the hook for it, man. It's scary.
Every franchise is going to have their own version of Bobby Bonilla Day in the future, I guess. Everyone's going to be still paying players 50 years from now with checks. Just insane stuff, but
Yeah.
really. All right, Brian. Yeah.
Also, I just realized baseball doesn't have a cap. So can we cut that part? I don't want to sound like an idiot.
Yeah, for sure, no problem. All right, Brian, you kicked ass with your quick pitches. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star follow. Just tell us who they are, what platforms they're on, and why they're following.
Oh, good question. I mean, I've been really fortunate over the course of my career to be surrounded by a lot of good, smart people. I would say, let's see. I'll give you two. For one of my favorite people that I look up to and kind of idolize from a business perspective is Scott O'Neill. He's a former CEO of the Sixers and the Devils.
Okay.
He's the current CEO of Merlin Entertainment. He wrote a book called "Be Where Your Feet Are" about 2 or 3 years ago. It's my favorite book in the world. I like it better than mine that I wrote. I love the way that guy sees the world. And he's kind of shaped the way that I think about work, the way that I think about how I contribute and show up every day to work. It's changed the way that I see my teammates. And kind of has changed the way how I carry myself in a way. It's a pretty powerful book. I highly recommend it. So yeah, Scott O'Neill is someone that I really look up to, and I'd love to give him a shout out. But then from a content creation perspective and social perspective, my good friend Tyler O'Day runs the Empire State Building social accounts,
Nice.
and I think what he and his team have done over the course of the last 2 or so years is mind-bogglingly amazing. How they've been able to give a building a voice.
Holy.
And I think what they're doing is so, so brilliant. And Tyler will probably kill me for doing this, but Tyler's a Barstool alum. And he and I have grown close over the years. He's a good friend, and I'm really proud of him for what he's been doing with his career. And just as someone that enjoys observing how consumer brands are positioning themselves on social, yeah, I love what they're doing. So yeah, I want to give Tyler O'Day a shout for the Empire State Building
I
social.
wholeheartedly support that. That's an awesome one. And how about you, Brian? Where can we find you? As well as, I don't expect you to name every Barstool sports account, but where can we find you? And then also, I'm curious, I guess, do you even know the number of social accounts under the Barstool umbrella? I imagine it's massive.
It's over 1,000.
Holy crap. That's
Over 1,000.
mind-blowing. So I won't ask you to name all 1,000. So let's figure out where do you want to direct the listeners to find you across social and digital, LinkedIn, Twitter, et cetera.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and LinkedIn. That's where I spend most of my time from a social perspective. On LinkedIn, just Brian Fitzsimmons. And then on Twitter, Brian Fitz underscore 14.
Awesome. Check him out. Follow his work. If you're listening to this, you probably have already seen some of his work in action. across the greater Barstool sports ecosystem. Just cannot thank you enough for lending us your wisdom, your time, your insight today. Just tremendous stuff. I mean, we really appreciate it, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil. This was fun. Let's do it again.
Thank you so much again to Brian Fitzsimmons, again, Director of Licensing and Business Development for Barstool Sports. Cannot thank him enough for his time. It's been really awesome to follow his work over the years, follow the work of Barstool Sports, continuing to innovate and create new opportunities just every single day. Just really interesting stuff, and certainly continue to watch and learn from Brian and his work with Barstool. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening. As always, you can find me on Twitter, NJH287, on LinkedIn, where I post more content, dsmsports.net, slike.co, and of course, subscribe to the podcast on your preferred podcast platform. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.